to the UK, though, where Matt Dathan is Home Affairs Editor at The Times. Hello, Matt.
Good morning.
Gosh, it's been a shocker for your Prime Minister of late. Really bad mayoral election results, local election results, and now another defection to the Labour Party.
Yes, that's right. So just 10 days or so after the last defection of Dan Poulter, another MP, this time Natalie Elphick, the MP for Dover, has switched sides. And this was really quite a shock and really quite a moment, because it came just as Prime Minister's questions was starting at noon. And some of the more beady-eyed journalists spotted that Natalie Elphick had switched sides physically and was actually sitting on the Labour benches. And then seconds later, an email arrived in all of our inboxes announcing that she had defected to the Labour Party. Now, this is even more of a shock than previous defections, because Natalie Elphick has been quite a right-wing MP, a right-wing Conservative MP for Dover since she was elected in 2019. And it's actually upset quite a lot of the Labour Party, especially female MPs. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, she's upset people in the party because she has expressed quite right-wing views, not just on immigration, but on other issues as well, and has repeatedly attacked Labour and Keir Starmer, calling him softy, for example, this time last year for his lack of a plan, she argued, on tackling the small boats crisis. And let's remember that her constituency, Dover, which is in Kent, bears the brunt of all the small boat crossings. You know, all the migrants who have crossed the channel in small boats arrive in Dover. So there's a real impact on her constituency and her constituents. But the other reason, and probably the main reason why female MPs in the Labour Party are upset about this, is because she very controversially stood by and supported her ex-husband, Charlie Elphick, despite him being convicted of sexually assaulting two women, and also was actually got into legal trouble herself after when she claimed that he was a victim of miscarriage of justice after that conviction. So it's actually not just Rishi Sunak who was facing quite a lot of stick tonight. It's Sir Keir Starmer has been accused by many on his own side of misjudging the mood and basically not having a bar or threshold for who he accepts into his party.
All right. His situation, I've seen some criticism even from his most senior people saying, you know, he needs to lift his game, but it's too late to change leader. Is that the consensus by those who are pointing the finger at him for where things are at?
Yeah, that's right. So this time last week, we were all sort of gearing up for a potential leadership contest for, I think it would be the fifth leadership change in about 5 years for the Conservatives, the third leader since 2019. The rebels have called off their planned coup. The local election results last Friday, Saturday sort of started rolling in, and they were amongst the worst they've had in about 40 years, the local elections, and they also lost the West Midlands mayoralty by just 1,500 votes. But the fact that he clung on to the Tees Valley mayor in the northeast of England gave Rishi Sunak something to cling on to, and the results weren't remarkably, they weren't actually as bad as some were predicting. So the rebels have basically decided that they're not going to try and oust him. They realised that they probably wouldn't succeed, despite the Conservatives losing nearly half the seats they contested, and Lib Dems actually winning more than the Conservatives. And so he sort of limps on, but it really is limping on. And as we saw today with Natalie Elphick, we've also seen divisions across the party. So even though he's still Prime Minister and it's quite clear now he's going to lead the party into the general election, most likely now in the autumn. You've got Robert Jenrick, who yesterday wrote a very quite damning report about the Conservative government's record on immigration, and warning Sunak that it would be unforgivable if he doesn't come forward and address and really drastically reduce numbers before the election. And at the same time, you then have Michael Gove telling the cabinet at the first meeting since those dire election results, warning right-wing Tories against what he's described as comfort eating by pursuing hardline policies that, quote, make us feel good about ourselves. So there's a party really divided on not just the direction in which the Conservative Party goes into the next general election, but also what it does from now until that general election.
Okay. Well, also on your beat today, Matt, this is the Home Secretary now announcing a new package of measures against Russia. What do they involve?
Yes, that's right. This is actually very much a reactive kind of move, but it's one that has been seen as quite some by some in Europe, actually, or in some in the Foreign Office and security circles as maybe overreacting. But basically, James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, today announced a package of measures against Russia. He revealed that new spying activity had been carried out at Russian-owned properties. So he's shutting down several Russian-owned properties in London suspected of being used as spying bases. This included a house in Sussex, I think it was, Surrey in the south of England, and also a property in North London. And he expelled from the UK Russia's defence and military attaché after basically finding that he was an undeclared military intelligence officer, basically a spy who has been had no diplomatic protection here. And this is all done under Britain's new National Security Act, which was passed last year. But it is quite a move to expel such a senior official from a foreign state, even in the context of relations with Russia. And it's already triggered quite a backlash from the Kremlin. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's any more repercussions. And also the Home Office were telling me earlier that if Russia does retaliate, then, well, the UK itself can go further by imposing further sanctions against Russia. So I think this is just another escalation of relations which are already rock bottom between Russia and the UK.
This is a case, though, of an attack on UK, attack, I use the word very loosely, an incident on UK soil, right? And is that still happening quite frequently?
Yes, sorry, I should have mentioned that this was a directed reaction to a suspected arson attack on a Ukrainian business in East London in March. And five individuals have actually been charged in connection with that attack, and two of those were charged under national security laws, suspected individuals who are suspected of working on behalf of the Russian state. So they're not actually Russian nationals. They are, well, at least one of them is a British national. So this attack on this Ukrainian business, it's still unknown why they were attacking this Ukrainian business. It was a parcel delivery company which did have a role in sending parcels, humanitarian parcels, to Ukraine. But why Russia wanted to attack it, we don't know. It was actually carried out, UK intelligence thinks it was carried out by the Wagner Group, which is the Vladimir Putin's mercenary group, in March. And so five individuals charged in connection to it. This was Britain's diplomatic response to it, and basically trying to say it's completely unacceptable to be attacking anyone on UK soil, let alone Ukrainian businessmen, Ukrainian businesses. And so if you continue to take this sort of action, then we will take firm and robust diplomatic response to that.
Now, the protests that have been happening at the United States with respect to the war in Gaza, the sit-ins at universities, is this starting to happen also in the UK?
Yeah, that's right. We've seen about a dozen sit-ins now, inspired by those scenes that we've seen in campuses in America, most notably in LA. Yes, so we've had most notably at Cambridge and Oxford students there setting up encampments on Monday in protest against the university's alleged complicity in the war in Gaza. And actually, Rishi Sunak summoned vice-chancellors to Downing Street to address this, what he described, unacceptable rise in anti-Semitism at university campuses across the UK, and the need to do more to keep Jewish students safe. But what we're hearing is tonight that vice-chancellors are so far refusing to sort of take the kind of reaction that Rishi Sunak would like to see. This is not obviously in response to those protests, but what, as we've seen, is quite a lot of anti-Semitism breaking out at campuses during those protests. But yes, we've seen at Oxford and Cambridge, increasing numbers of students and other campaigners camping out in tents in very prominent those beauty spots in both those university cities. And it's very clear that they're not going to go anywhere anytime soon. And I think this is going to be an issue that we will be talking about increasingly as another sort of I guess another avenue through which campaigners here in the UK are trying to make their voices heard about not just the UK government's involvement and close support of Israel in their war against Gaza, but also against institutions like universities across the UK in terms of their involvement or their investment in Israel-linked businesses.
All right. Just finally, just coming back to that question of the Tories' situation, it was an interesting comment Michael Gove made, wasn't it? Because the argument now is, as you get more desperate in the run-up to an election with the polls as they are, whether you veer even further right or what you do. What was his advice?
Well, yeah, so this his advice at cabinet, he was saying that the Tories are best when they're united and have a broad appeal to the rest of the country after suffering some heavy losses like they have in the local elections, and that has probably been true in, if you look back in to the 2015 general election when David Cameron won that surprise election and everyone thought that Ed Miliband was going to become Prime Minister. He was ahead in the polls consistently, and David Cameron managed to unite his party around a platform that wasn't the
Yeah.
kind of right-wing platform that we are seeing now.
Interesting. We'll see how it all unfolds. Thank you very much for your time. As always, Matt Dathan, Home Affairs Editor at The Times.